When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Lawyers, what's the most insane piece of evidence someone proudly brought you that ruined their own case? Story one. I was defending a guy accused of workplace harassment. He swore he had ironclad proof that his coworker was lying. A full text thread that he claimed showed mutual flirting. Proudly, he handed me a printed stack of screenshots. Right away, something felt wrong. For starters, the timestamps jumped around. Then I noticed the contact name was Jessica. The problem being, the co-worker's name was Dana. I asked him point blank if these were authentic. He smirked and said, I edited the names so it would look better. But it's still true flirting, just from someone else. No, it was from his ex-girlfriend years ago. He literally tried to pass off unrelated, old, heavily edited messages as current evidence. When the opposing counsel saw it, they just blinked in disbelief and said, we'll be moving for sanctions. I had no choice. I withdrew from the case that same day, citing ethical obligations. He ended up losing badly and getting hit with fines for attempting to deceive the court. Story 2. A woman came to me about a custody battle, determined to prove her ex-husband was an unfit parent. She said she had a killer video that would destroy him. The video was a 30-second clip of him at a barbecue, beer in hand, singing karaoke terribly. That was it. No kids present, no illegal behavior, just a dad embarrassing himself with a butchered rendition of Sweet Caroline. I tried to explain very gently that this video didn't show neglect, abuse, or anything remotely relevant. She got defensive, saying, "He's drunk. Look at him. How can he be trusted with our daughter?" I pointed out there was no evidence he was intoxicated, just a bad singer. She insisted on submitting it anyway. In court, the judge watched the clip with visible confusion, then asked her attorney if there was more. There wasn't. Not only did it fail to hurt her ex's case, it made her look petty and vindictive. The judge later commented that the mother seemed more concerned with humiliation than child welfare. She lost primary custody. Story 3. During a real estate dispute, my client wanted to prove the neighbor was maliciously trespassing onto his land. He told me he had photographs, and he was ecstatic about it. What he brought were dozens of photos of the neighbor standing in his own backyard, minding his own business. Not a single frame showed the neighbor crossing the property line. I asked, "How do these show him on your land?" He said confidently, "You can just tell." I pushed further. Was there a survey line, a fence, any demarcation? Nope. Worse, when we tried to authenticate the photos, we discovered they were taken with a wide-angle lens that distorted distances. It made the neighbor look much closer to the camera than he actually was. Opposing counsel shredded him. Our own expert had to admit there was no conclusive evidence of trespassing. The judge dismissed the complaint, and my client had to pay the neighbor's attorney fees, all because he thought vibes were enough. Story 4. A man accused of assault insisted on bringing me proof that the other guy started it, a detailed journal he kept. At first glance, it seemed almost helpful. Dates, times, descriptions of incidents. Then I noticed he used strangely dramatic language. One entry read, March 12th, stalked my prey like a wolf, knew today would be the day. Another, March 14th, baited him successfully. The idiot took the first swing as planned. It went on like that for pages. Bragging about setting traps, provoking altercations, and even contemplating how sweet it would be to finally drop the facade and unleash violence. I asked him if he understood what he had written. He smiled and said, "It shows I outsmarted him." No, it showed premeditation, open, gloating premeditation. I couldn't use any of it. Opposing counsel, however, subpoenaed the journal when they found out it existed. It sank him completely. He ended up pleading guilty to a lesser charge, but he could have walked away clean if he hadn't documented his villain arc like a Bond villain. Story 5. One of the wildest cases I ever handled involved a guy fighting a DUI charge. He was adamant that his dash cam would exonerate him. "I was fine," he said. "Watch the footage, you'll see." The dash cam video started with him smoothly pulling out of a bar parking lot, but within seconds he veered across three lanes without signaling. Then he ran a red light, clipped a curb, and cursed loudly. You could hear him mutter, "Hope the cops don't see that." Within a minute, flashing lights appeared behind him. He insisted it looked worse than it was, so I humored him and reviewed the rest. At one point, he tried to hand his license to a tree. Yes, a literal tree. The arresting officer had to redirect him back to the car, and it was all on camera, his own camera, submitted voluntarily. Needless to say, we didn't go to trial. He accepted a plea deal immediately. To this day, it's the only time I've had a client single-handedly create the prosecution's entire case for them. Story 6. I once represented a woman who wanted to sue her ex-employer for wrongful termination. She claimed she was fired over baseless accusations of theft. She was excited to show me her smoking gun, a series of emails between her and her manager. In the emails, she argued aggressively that her co-workers were stealing supplies and accused the manager of covering it up. One particular email she proudly highlighted said, "I know everyone's dirty secrets. If you fire me, I'll expose everything and make sure the company burns." I froze when I read that. I tried to explain that, rather than proving wrongful termination, the emails made it look like she was blackmailing her employer. It didn't help that the next message included an attached spreadsheet titled, "People I'll Destroy First," with names and alleged offenses, most of which were just gossip. In court, the company's lawyers barely had to try. They showed the emails and rested their case. She lost spectacularly and opened herself to countersuits. She still didn't understand what went wrong. Story 7. I was defending a man accused of insurance fraud. His house had mysteriously burned down, and investigators were suspicious. He told me he had something that would shut them all up. What he gave me was a photo album. Not digital photos, mind you, but a literal scrapbook, documenting the entire process of him renovating his house before the fire. And by renovating, I mean stripping it down to the bare studs, removing anything valuable, and then documenting each empty room with captions like, "Perfectly ready, just needs a little spark." There were also photos of him laughing in front of gasoline cans, and one where he had actually written "insurance payday" in a speech bubble next to himself. I honestly thought it was some elaborate prank at first. It wasn't. When we turned it over as required, the prosecutor's office reportedly laughed for hours. He ended up serving prison time, mostly because of his own handmade criminal confession book. Story 8. A landlord was being sued for illegal eviction and retaliation. He insisted he had evidence that his tenant was lying about being wrongfully kicked out. He came into my office grinning ear to ear, waving a USB stick like it was a golden ticket. The file, an audio recording? In it, you could clearly hear him threatening the tenant. "You don't pay extra this month. I'll make sure you find your stuff in the street by tomorrow. You think the law's gonna help you? Good luck." After the threat, there were several loud banging noises, later identified as him hammering boards over the tenant's door to lock them out. He looked at me and said, "See, he provoked me." No, absolutely not. He had basically recorded himself committing multiple crimes and thought it would help. We didn't even make it to court. He settled fast and paid hefty damages. That USB drive might still be the worst defense evidence I've ever seen. Story 9. During a nasty divorce case, my client insisted he had proof his wife was hiding assets. He delivered a box full of financial documents to my office, boasting that he had broken into her private email to gather them. Yep, hacked her account. I immediately told him that was illegal and that we couldn't use stolen evidence. He didn't understand. "But it's true," he said. "Look at all the stuff she's got." I refused to submit anything and warned him to stop snooping. Predictably, the opposing counsel found out about the hack. His client emailed my client asking why he had accessed her Dropbox, which, you guessed it, he answered. In the end, my client was sanctioned heavily, had to pay her attorney's fees, and the judge heavily favored the wife during asset division. If he just let it go, he probably would have walked away with a decent settlement. Instead, his greed and stupidity made him the villain in the court's eyes. Story 10. I represented a teenage boy charged with vandalism after a local park was defaced with graffiti. He swore up and down that he was innocent. His mother was equally adamant. They brought me a timeline diary he had supposedly kept, showing he was at a friend's house during the time of the vandalism. At first glance, it seemed helpful. Very detailed entries about what he was doing every hour. But then I noticed the diary had multiple pages that were suspiciously identical. Watched TV, had snacks, played video games, copied word for word for different dates. More damning, the pages had the wrong day of the week for the dates listed. March 10th wasn't a Saturday that year. It was a Wednesday. When I asked about it, the boy broke down immediately. His mom had written the diary after he was arrested, trying to create an alibi. The prosecutors didn't even have to prove the vandalism charge. They added an obstruction of justice charge instead. The case completely imploded. It still breaks my heart because it was the mom's bad decision that got her son in worse trouble than he started with. Story 11. One time I represented a small business owner accused of violating labor laws by...
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Underpaying employees. He told me he had absolute proof that his workers had agreed to be paid less. Signed contracts. When he showed me the contracts, my stomach dropped. Each contract was clearly printed on napkins, literal restaurant napkins. And the signatures? Half of them looked forged. Same handwriting, no witnesses, no dates, not even full names, just things like Monsieur Smith or Joe. Worse yet, some had post-it notes attached like, get Bob to sign later. But Bob's signature was already there. I asked if he had any real paperwork. He said no, proudly explaining that napkins were good enough in cowboy days. Opposing counsel nearly choked laughing during discovery. The judge called the evidence insulting. My client not only lost, but also had to pay substantial damages for his blatant disregard for proper contracts. The napkins, however, became a legendary joke in our office for years after. Story 12. I had a case involving a woman suing her former best friend over a soured business partnership. She was furious and came to me saying, I have the tape that proves she's a liar. She gave me an audio recording of a phone call. But as I listened, my heart sank. The tape was a recording of her pretending to be the other woman, faking a confession. Her voice, poorly disguised, said things like, oh, I was so evil. I stole all the money, haha. You could literally hear her dog barking in the background, the same dog she owned that the other woman did not. When I confronted her about the fake, she shrugged and said, I thought if they heard it, they'd just believe it. Submitting fabricated evidence would have cost me my license. I immediately withdrew as counsel. In the end, she ended up not only losing her lawsuit, but facing criminal charges for attempted fraud. She thought she was clever, until the real world hit back hard. Story 13. I once had a client charged with destruction of property. He insisted that the property owner was lying about the timeline of events. He said, check out my dash cam footage. It proves I wasn't even there. I was hopeful until I pressed play. The video started with him driving calmly, then pulling up to the building. He got out, clearly visible on camera, took a metal pipe from his trunk, and smashed the mailbox. All caught in perfect HD with clear audio of him yelling, that's what you get. Then he got back in the car and drove off, all while the dash cam rolled. I asked him why he thought this helped. He said, dead serious, it shows I left after. I had to explain that yes, leaving the scene after committing the crime didn't exactly exonerate him. Needless to say, the prosecution was delighted when we disclosed the footage. He pled guilty shortly after, and the judge described it as one of the most helpfully self-incriminating videos they'd ever seen. Story 14. During a contract dispute over a luxury car sale, my client proudly presented me with proof that the buyer had agreed to purchase the vehicle as is. He handed me a text conversation screenshot. It read, "Buyer, I'll need to get it inspected first." Seller, my client, "Nah, bro, buy it now or someone else will grab it." Buyer, "No inspection, no deal." Seller, "Fine, inspection tomorrow." And yet, my client tried to argue that the first "buy it now" text overruled everything else. I explained that the final agreement was clear. The buyer conditioned the sale on inspection. It was in writing. He refused to listen. In court, he kept waving the initial message around like a flag, while opposing counsel calmly walked the judge through the full conversation. It took 10 minutes for the judge to rule against him. He had effectively destroyed his own position by showcasing evidence that directly supported the other side. You could see the moment it dawned on him, about 5 seconds too late. Story 15. I represented a college student accused of plagiarism in an academic hearing. He insisted he had a perfect defense, a draft copy of his paper with all citations properly included, showing he had done the work himself. He emailed me the file. When I opened it, the metadata revealed the document had been created 2 days after the final paper had been submitted. Even worse, the draft file's author was listed as his older brother, not him. When I asked about it, he blurted out, "Oh yeah, my brother fixed it up after I got accused. But the ideas were mine." I had to explain that post-accusation edits couldn't retroactively prove innocence, especially not when created under someone else's name. The university ruled against him, and he was suspended for a year. If he had been honest from the start, he might have faced only minor penalties. Instead, the fake draft made things 10 times worse. And yet, when it was over, he still seemed surprised. Story 16. I represented a guy in a personal injury lawsuit after he claimed he slipped and fell at a supermarket. He swore he had a slam dunk, a witness statement from a friend who saw it all happen. When he handed me the letter, my heart sank. The statement was written on a greasy diner placemat, complete with ketchup stains. His friend had signed it Tony the Legend and included gems like, "Bro totally ate it hard, it was epic," and "Store's fault 100% LOL. Worse yet, the witness wasn't even there. He had been out of state, something easily proven by social media posts. I explained that not only would the letter be inadmissible, but it would open the door to claims of fraud. The opposing side dug in hard, found evidence of the fake witness, and we ended up settling for a tiny amount, much less than if he had just been honest. When I told him that his legend buddy cost him thousands, he just shrugged and said, "Bro still got my back, though." Story 17. One case that sticks with me was a man being sued for unpaid wages by a former employee. He insisted the employee was lying and had proof that she was lazy and deserved to be fired. The proof? A compilation of security footage, edited together into a humiliating laziness montage, complete with goofy sound effects and meme captions like "Employee of the Month" under footage of her sipping coffee. The problem was, the unedited footage, which we had to turn over, showed her doing her job perfectly fine. He had spent hours selectively editing harmless moments to make her look bad. In discovery, opposing counsel got hold of the raw tapes and methodically showed frame by frame how the evidence was doctored. The judge was furious. Instead of defending himself, my client ended up paying the unpaid wages, damages for emotional distress, and sanctions for trying to manipulate evidence, all because he wanted to make a funny video. Story 18. I had a client fighting a shoplifting charge. He swore he had proof he never even entered the store. He showed up with a timestamp selfie. In the photo, he's grinning at home, with a visible clock behind him showing the supposed time of the theft. At first glance, it looked perfect, until an intern in our office pointed out something odd. The same exact photo had already been posted on his Instagram 6 months earlier. He had photoshopped a new timestamp onto an old selfie. The kicker? He left the Christmas tree in the background, in the middle of July. I confronted him, and he tried to play dumb, but eventually admitted he thought it was close enough. Once prosecutors saw the Instagram post, the plea offer evaporated. Instead of probation, he did 3 months in county jail for trying to submit fake evidence. A Christmas tree in July still cracks me up. Story 19. A woman hired me to defend her against fraud charges after she allegedly sold counterfeit handbags online. She insisted she had proof the bags were genuine. Text messages from the supplier confirming authenticity. She sent me screenshots. Problem was, The text conversation was riddled with typos like Gucci with triple O, and one message literally read, "Yes, yes, is 100% legit purse's friend, no worry." I asked if she understood that these messages made her look worse, not better. Even worse, when we subpoenaed the supplier's real number, we found out she had faked the entire conversation by texting herself from a burner phone. The prosecution crushed her. She ended up pleading guilty, paid restitution, and lost her business license. She could have defended herself with some dignity if she hadn't invented the most hilariously fake evidence ever. Story 20. During a property boundary dispute, my client, an elderly gentleman, brought me his absolute proof that the neighbor's fence crossed onto his land. His evidence? A hand-drawn map he made himself featuring dragons, a pirate ship, and the label Danger Zone over the neighbor's pool. I blinked at it, unsure if he was joking. He wasn't. "This is what it used to look like before they moved in," he said proudly. When I asked if he had any actual surveys or official property records, he pulled out the same map, but in color. Needless to say, his homemade medieval fantasy map didn't exactly sway the judge. The court relied on official land surveys, all of which favored the neighbor. My client lost the case, but honestly, his sheer confidence and creativity almost made it worth it. Almost. Story 21. I once defended a woman in a lawsuit involving a hit-and-run accident. She insisted she had a receipt, proving she was at a gas station across town at the time of the incident. She triumphantly handed me the receipt. Right away, two issues jumped out. First, the timestamp was smudged and barely legible. Second, the receipt was from a station that had been closed for renovation for 2 months, very publicly, as it had made the local news. When I confronted her, she shrugged and said, "It could have been open. How would I know?" I explained that fabricated evidence is worse than no evidence. Prosecutors subpoenaed gas station records to confirm closure, and it nuked her credibility completely. In the end, she had to settle for a much harsher penalty than she would have if she hadn't waved around a fake, expired receipt like a golden ticket. Story 22. One of my most bizarre cases involved an elderly man charged with trespassing on a private golf course after hours. He insisted he had permission and brought me proof, a handwritten note. The note simply read, "You can play anytime," signed, "The owner." No name, no date, no address. I asked who wrote it. He said he found it taped to the clubhouse door years ago and figured it applied forever. In court, he pulled it out dramatically, holding it up like a sacred scroll. The opposing counsel calmly pointed out that the ownership of the club had changed hands twice in the last decade, and nobody had any record of such a note. The judge politely asked if he had any real evidence. He said, "This note feels real." Verdict? Guilty, but the court kindly gave him a small fine instead of jail time, probably out of pity for how genuinely he believed that scrap of paper was his permanent all-access pass. Story 23. A man accused of cyberstalking proudly told me he had screenshots proving that his ex-girlfriend was the one harassing him. The screenshots were, at first glance, brutal, messages full of threats and insults. But then I noticed every single one of them had a different font style from message to message. Some were Arial, others Times New Roman, one even Comic Sans. Also, the timestamps overlapped weirdly. He had typed up fake messages in a word processor, screenshotted them, and tried to pass them off as text conversations. When I asked why he didn't just bring the real text from his phone, he said, "This way it's cleaner and looks more professional." No, it looked like a second grader's PowerPoint project. The prosecution caught it immediately. The fakes made everything worse. Not only did he lose, but they also cited the attempt to fabricate evidence as part of his sentencing. Story 24. In a contentious landlord-tenant case, the landlord, my client, claimed that the tenant left the place utterly destroyed. He said he had bulletproof evidence, a video walkthrough of the apartment after the tenant moved out. I watched the video. It showed a trashed apartment, sure. Holes in the walls, broken doors, garbage everywhere. But there was one problem. In the video, he kept accidentally filming himself breaking things. Like, you could clearly see his hand punching drywall and knocking over furniture while muttering, "This'll show him." It wasn't even subtle. At one point, he forgot the camera was rolling and used a crowbar to smash a doorframe while whistling. I told him we could not use this footage. He insisted it wouldn't be obvious if we just edited it right. Instead, we immediately moved toward settlement, trying to minimize the inevitable backlash once opposing counsel got the full video in discovery. Sometimes clients are their own worst enemies. This guy was practically his own demolition crew. Story 25. A woman hired me to defend her in a lawsuit claiming she had slandered her neighbor on Facebook. She was excited to show me proof that she had never posted anything defamatory. She printed screenshots of her Facebook page, hundreds of pages, showing nothing but pictures of her dog. The catch? Every post had been made after the lawsuit was filed. She had deleted all old posts and spammed hundreds of innocuous ones to make it look like that's all she ever posted. Of course, Facebook archives everything. Opposing counsel subpoenaed the real records, revealing dozens of now-deleted posts calling her neighbor a drug dealer, child abuser, and devil spawn. Her attempt to cover it up just confirmed intent to destroy evidence, which made her liability and damages even worse. When the verdict came down, she looked at me and said, "But the dog posts were cute." They were. Unfortunately, cuteness isn't a legal defense. Story 26. I represented a woman in a civil lawsuit over damage to a rental property she had recently vacated. She insisted she had photographic proof that the property was in perfect condition when she left. She handed me a set of printed photos. Problem? Every photo was suspiciously perfect. Pristine carpets, sparkling walls, brand new appliances. It screamed staged. I checked the metadata out of habit. The photos were taken 3 years earlier before she had even moved in. When I pointed this out, she shrugged and said, "Well, it's what it looked like when I got there. So it's fair to say that's what it should look like when I left." No, that's not how it works. Opposing counsel had recent inspection photos showing massive holes in walls, pet damage, and black mold. Her fake evidence made her lose credibility instantly, and she got hammered with damages, court costs, and a stern warning from the judge about attempted fraud. Story 27. In a case involving a brawl outside a nightclub, my client, who was facing assault charges, insisted he had a witness statement that would exonerate him. He proudly presented a notarized affidavit. Sounds good, right? Except the witness claimed in the document that he saw my client chilling at home playing Xbox at the time of the fight, despite the fact that the witness lived 3 states away and hadn't been in town for months. We found plane tickets, hotel receipts, and social media posts showing the witness hadn't visited in almost a year. When I asked my client why he thought this would work, he just said, "It's notarized, bro. That means it's legit." I had to explain that notarization just verifies signatures, not truthfulness. The opposing side uncovered the lies easily. My client's plea deal got much worse because of the attempted fraud, and the witness faced charges of perjury. All that because someone thought a notary stamp was a magical shield against facts. Story 28. I had a case where a woman was being sued for breach of contract after canceling a major catering event last minute. She said she had the ultimate excuse: a doctor's note saying she had a medical emergency. She proudly handed me the note. The letterhead said, "Dr. Steve, Maryland." No last name, no clinic address, just Dr. Steve. The note said, "Patient too sick for party, sorry," and was signed in what looked like crayon. When I asked her who Dr. Steve was, she said, "He's my neighbor. He used to want to be a doctor." Turns out, Dr. Steve was a former med student who had dropped out a decade ago and now ran a vape shop. I couldn't even present the note in court. Once the opposing counsel found out, they asked for sanctions. The case collapsed in their favor instantly. Please, folks, if you're going to fake a medical excuse, don't use someone whose qualifications are vape expert. Story 29. A corporate client once tried to fend off a fraud investigation by proudly handing me a certified audit report showing their books were in perfect order. At first, it looked professional, a thick, glossy booklet with charts and signatures. But something felt off. Digging into it, we found the report was written by a company called Triple A Best Audit Services, LLC, a shell company the client had created 2 months earlier. They audited themselves. The report had been assembled using stock templates they found online and the signatures, fake names like John Accountant and Betty Ledger. When I confronted them, the CEO just laughed and said, "It's not a real audit, but it sounds impressive, right?" No, it sounded like prison time. The fake audit became the centerpiece of the prosecution's case. The government came down hard, and the company was fined into oblivion. Some executives faced criminal charges, too. Self-audits don't count, especially when you make up the auditors. Story 30. One of the saddest cases I handled involved a young man accused of stealing from his employer. He said he had a solid defense: text messages showing his boss giving him permission to take extra stock as a bonus. He printed them out, but the formatting was suspicious. Upon checking, the texts were created using one of those fake text message generator apps. At the bottom of the page, it literally said, "Created using faketexts.com." When I confronted him, he broke down crying. It turned out he panicked after realizing there were no real messages and thought making a fake set would save him. It didn't. The prosecutor tore him apart in court. The judge was harsh but gave him some mercy due to his age and genuine remorse. Still, he ended up with a record. If he had just told the truth from the beginning, he probably would have gotten probation. The fake messages turned a bad situation into a disaster. Story 31. I once had a client charged with embezzlement from a small nonprofit where he worked. He claimed he could prove the money he took was actually reimbursements for expenses. He showed up with a box full of receipts. At first glance, they looked legitimate. Gas stations, office supplies, business lunches. But after flipping through a few, something strange caught my eye. The handwriting on every receipt was identical. Digging deeper, we realized he had bought a roll of blank receipt paper and handwrote hundreds of fake business expenses. Some were hilarious, like office petting zoo supplies and executive hoverboard rental. When I confronted him, he said, "I figured they wouldn't check everyone." The prosecutor did check everyone. Once they found the fake receipts, the fraud charges quadrupled. Instead of working out a small restitution deal, he ended up facing serious prison time. I still tell law students, if every receipt looks like it came from the same left-handed fifth grader, it's probably not going to fly. Story 32. I represented a young woman accused of vandalizing her ex-boyfriend's car. She insisted she had proof she was out of town at the time, a boarding pass for a flight to Florida. She proudly emailed me a photo of the pass. I immediately noticed that the font looked off. Turns out she downloaded a Create Your Own Boarding Pass novelty app online and printed one. She even got the airline name wrong, Southeastern Airlines, which doesn't exist. Even worse, when the opposing counsel subpoenaed airline records, there was no flight under her name and no such airline operating anywhere. When I asked her why she thought this would work, she said, "I just figured it looked official enough." It didn't. She ended up not only losing the case, but having the judge tack on an extra fine for trying to deceive the court. Sometimes the cover-up really is worse than the original accusation. Story 33. A landlord client once tried to avoid refunding a security deposit by claiming the tenant had destroyed the apartment. He proudly handed me a stack of photos showing massive flooding and water damage. One problem: every photo clearly showed a different apartment layout than his own. Different floors, different kitchens, different fixtures. He had grabbed random pictures from a Google Images search for apartment flood damage. Worse yet, the watermark for Shutterstock was still visible on some of the images. When I pointed this out, he grinned and said, "Come on, who's going to notice?" The opposing attorney noticed immediately. Once the court realized the evidence was fake, the judge ruled in the tenant's favor without even needing a hearing. My client ended up paying double the deposit back plus court fees, and he was lucky not to face contempt charges. Story 34. I defended a man accused of forging signatures on checks from a business account. He swore he had legitimate authorization, a signed letter from the business owner. When he showed it to me, it looked suspiciously new. Crisp paper, fresh ink, no letterhead. But the real kicker? The letter said, "I, business boss man, give full permission to my trusted friend." Yes, business boss man. It wasn't even the guy's name. He tried to claim it was a nickname they used informally, but the truth was obvious. He typed it himself, printed it, and scribbled a fake signature. When the real business owner testified, he brought samples of his real signature. Totally different handwriting. The court didn't buy the nickname defense, and my client ended up with multiple fraud convictions. Lesson: if you're going to forge documents, maybe don't address your boss as business boss man. Story 35. One of my saddest cases involved a teenager accused of shoplifting. His parents insisted they had proof he was innocent. A store receipt showing he had purchased everything in his bag. When I looked at it, the receipt was from the right store, but from a location 200 miles away, dated 6 months prior. They had carefully trimmed the top and bottom of the receipt to hide the details, but the store number was still faintly visible. When confronted, the parents broke down, admitting they had panicked and thought faking a receipt would save their son from trouble. It backfired horribly. Instead of a minor shoplifting charge and community service, the judge considered the attempted cover-up as obstruction. The teen still got a lighter sentence because the judge felt sorry for him being dragged into his parents' scheme, but it was heartbreaking to watch. Sometimes desperate people make things 10 times worse without realizing the damage they're doing. Story 36. A guy hired me to defend him in a lawsuit claiming he had plagiarized an invention design from his former employer. He said he had his own original sketches to prove he'd invented the product independently years earlier. He showed up with a binder full of drawings. At first glance, they looked okay, until I noticed something odd. The sketches were drawn on the back of printed Starbucks menus from 2022. The invention lawsuit was about a product from 2019. When I pointed it out, he panicked and said, "Can't you just argue that I found old paper later?" "No, that's not how time works, or courts." Opposing counsel easily proved the fraud by cross-referencing the printing dates on the paper. His credibility tanked so hard that even unrelated testimony was doubted afterward. Instead of fighting over ownership, he basically handed victory to the other side, with a Starbucks logo still visible in the corner. Story 37. One client was charged with assault after allegedly punching a guy at a sports bar. He insisted he had witnesses ready to testify that he had been calm the whole night. He even brought me written statements from three people who saw everything. Problem. He forgot that two of the witnesses had already posted videos of the fight online. In the videos, you could hear his witnesses chanting his name while he threw the first punch. One even yelled, "Knock his teeth out, Mike," before the fight started. When I confronted my client, he said, "Yeah, but their statements are more polite." The court didn't care about politeness. Once the video surfaced, we didn't even have room to negotiate a plea. The DA refused anything but a full conviction. Politeness doesn't erase high-definition footage of you committing the crime. Story 38. In a bizarre family inheritance dispute, my client wanted to prove his sister had manipulated their late father into changing his will. He said he had audio recordings to prove undue influence. What he actually brought were secret recordings of their conversations, but not from the time the will was changed. They were recent recordings, and they featured my client coaching his sister to admit certain things, like, "Just say you told Dad he had to leave me out or whatever. Just say it. I'll delete the tape after." She kept refusing, sounding confused. When I explained to him that coaching someone on tape wasn't proof of past wrongdoing, he didn't get it. But if she had done it, she would have said so. "No, that's not how burden of proof works." Opposing counsel filed for sanctions immediately after hearing about the tapes, and my client's case collapsed under the weight of his own desperate tactics. Story 39. I defended a construction contractor accused of abandoning a project mid-job and pocketing the deposit. He told me he had proof the homeowners breached first, a signed document releasing him from further obligations. Sounds good, right? When he finally showed it to me, it was clearly a document he had signed himself, with two fake signatures for the homeowners, both written in the same pen, same handwriting, 10 seconds apart. He even made the mistake of using their first names only, signed Bob and Jenny. In formal contract law, first names alone aren't enough, and it was obvious the signatures were forged. Opposing counsel didn't even have to argue. They just pointed to the Bob and Jenny signatures and asked the homeowners if they had ever signed anything that way. They hadn't. We settled for an enormous payout, and my client narrowly avoided criminal charges. He later asked me, "Would it have helped if I'd used their full names?" Buddy, that wasn't the problem. Story 40. I once represented a guy fighting a traffic violation where he allegedly ran multiple red lights. He swore up and down he had dash cam footage that proved all lights were green when he crossed. I reviewed the footage he provided. Sure, the lights were green, but only because he edited the video frame by frame badly, using a free editing app that literally left a watermark reading Greenify Pro Version Trial across the bottom of the screen. It was painfully obvious. Plus, the real footage from the traffic cams showed he blew through two fully red lights at high speed. When I asked why he thought the edited footage would work, he said, "Well, at least I tried. Courts don't give points for effort in evidence tampering." He ended up with extra fines and a license suspension, all of which could have been avoided if he'd just accepted the original penalty without digging his hole deeper. Story 41. I had a client being sued for fraud after allegedly lying on a business loan application. He swore he had documents proving his income, tax returns, bank statements, everything. When I asked to see them, he handed me a folder. Inside were dozens of official documents, but every page had visible typos. One tax return listed his occupation as entrepreneur. His bank statements had misspelled the name of his own bank. Then there was the cherry on top. The IRS letterhead at the top of the documents had the Eagle logo, wearing sunglasses. He had copied some kind of joke template online, thinking no one would notice. When I explained that these documents weren't just bad, they were criminally bad, he just shrugged and said, "They seem legit enough." We scrambled to mitigate the damage, but he still got buried under the fraud case. The judge called his evidence comically fraudulent. No argument here. Story 42. In a nasty neighbor dispute, my client insisted she could prove the neighbor was spying on her. She said she had photos of a hidden camera aimed at her backyard. When she showed me the photos, it was immediately obvious. She had zoomed in on a completely normal birdhouse. No wires, no lenses, just a wooden birdhouse hanging from a tree. Worse, in one of the photos, you could clearly see a small bird poking its head out of the hole. I asked her if she was sure about the camera. She said, deadly serious, "Birds can be trained. We didn't have much to work with." At trial, the opposing side brought the actual birdhouse to court. The judge examined it personally and saw nothing but a few twigs and some old bird seed. Case dismissed in record time. Story 43. A man hired me to defend him in a wrongful termination case after being fired from a retail store. He said he was fired for no reason and had glowing reviews from management. When I asked for copies of the reviews, he handed me a series of printed emails. Problem, every email was addressed to Dear Valued Employee. A generic form letter. Worse, he had photoshopped them. Badly. The fonts didn't match. And one email ended mid-sentence with, "We are extremely pleased with your purr." When I pointed this out, he admitted he had touched them up a little to make himself look better. Opposing counsel subpoenaed the store's HR files and found multiple disciplinary actions against him for tardiness, customer complaints, and once falling asleep behind the register. The fake reviews weren't just useless. They painted him as a liar and tanked any chance of a favorable settlement. Story 44. I had a client facing accusations of forging signatures on a will. He insisted he had a video showing the deceased signing it in person. When I reviewed the video, I realized it was staged. The video showed a man, clearly alive, but it wasn't the deceased. It was someone else entirely, wearing a gray wig and sunglasses indoors. The fake grandpa kept squinting at the camera and muttering, "What's my line again?" When I asked my client who that was, he said, "It's a dramatization." A dramatization presented as real evidence. The opposing side tore it apart, bringing the real date of death, medical records, and photographs to show the deceased had been bedridden months before the supposed signing. The judge didn't just rule against him. He referred the case for criminal investigation. All because he thought a low-budget reenactment could pass as reality. Story 45. One client was charged with insurance fraud after claiming his car had been stolen. He said he had security camera proof showing thieves driving away. When I asked to see the footage, he handed me a grainy video file. It showed two masked figures pushing a car down a street. But in the corner, you could clearly see him, my client, standing nearby, laughing and filming the whole thing. You could even hear him say, "Get it past the corner and we're golden, boys." It wasn't even subtle. When I pointed this out, he said, "Yeah, but they technically moved the car. I didn't." Needless to say, that didn't hold up. The DA happily played the video in court. The insurance fraud charge stuck, and my client ended up with jail time and restitution payments. If you're going to fake a theft, maybe don't record yourself coaching the thieves. Story 46. I represented a woman in a breach of contract case involving a wedding venue. She claimed the venue canceled on her for no reason, and she deserved a full refund. She said she had email proof showing she fulfilled all the terms. When she forwarded me the emails, they all looked suspiciously clean, identical formatting, even the timestamps were oddly close together. A deeper look revealed she had created the emails herself, using her own email address under a fake name. She had simply changed the sender name to venue manager without realizing the email metadata would still show her Gmail address. When opposing counsel subpoenaed the venue server logs, it was game over. She didn't just lose the case. The venue successfully countersued for defamation because she had been blasting them on social media using her fake proof the entire time. Forging emails? Always a fast track to losing everything. Story 47. I once defended a guy accused of public intoxication and resisting arrest. He insisted he had video evidence from his friend's phone showing he was totally sober and cooperative with police. I requested the video. It started normal enough. Him standing outside a club looking a little wobbly but talking calmly. But then, mid-argument with officers, he turned to the camera, winked and loudly slurred, "Don't worry, bro. If they arrest me, we'll sue the crap out of them." It only got worse. He stumbled, dropped his beer, then challenged a police officer to a push-up contest in the middle of the street. When I asked if he still thought the video helped him, he said, "Well, it shows my fun personality, right?" The prosecution loved it. We ended up pleading out to avoid trial because no jury on earth would see that footage and think wrongful arrest. Story 48. A client came to me desperate after being fired for inappropriate conduct at work. He said he had screenshots proving a coworker was actually the one harassing him. He proudly handed me a printout of DMs that, at first glance, seemed damning. Graphic messages sent to him. But then I noticed something odd. All the incoming messages were perfectly timed, exactly 1 minute apart, and they were written in a tone that felt off. Turns out, he had created a dummy account impersonating his coworker and sent himself fake messages to build a harassment claim. Problem? He left traces. The dummy account used his own backup email address, the one registered under his real name. When I'd investigated, they traced everything back to him. He didn't just lose the wrongful termination case. He got referred to the police for identity fraud. Story 49. In a construction lawsuit, my client was accused of abandoning a home renovation halfway through. He told me he had a letter from the homeowners releasing him from the contract. The letter was suspiciously short. It read, "We let contractor name leave the project, no hard feelings." It was handwritten on a piece of Hello Kitty stationery. No date, no addresses, no signatures matching anything official. When I asked about it, he shrugged and said, "I figured it looked friendly." Friendly? Maybe. Legally binding? Absolutely not. In court, the homeowners presented the real contract, their payment receipts, and professional letters requesting refunds. No mention of releasing him from obligations. The judge took one look at the Hello Kitty note and ruled almost instantly in favor of the homeowners. That letter now hangs in our office as a running joke about what not to bring your lawyer. Story 50. I once worked a case where a client was trying to sue a fast food restaurant for food poisoning. He said he had kept the poisoned burger for evidence. When he brought it in, it was, no exaggeration, 2 months old, kept in a Ziploc bag under his car seat the entire time. It looked and smelled like a science experiment gone wrong. Moldy, shriveled, barely recognizable. But he insisted, "We can test it for toxins." No, we couldn't. Chain of custody was broken, the sample was contaminated beyond recognition, and no lab would even accept it. Worse, surveillance footage from the restaurant showed him eating two burgers happily, then ordering dessert afterward. There was no way to argue he was immediately sick. When I told him the case was dead, he said, "Well, maybe the dessert made it worse. Maybe. But no court was going to entertain a 2-month-old burger pulled out of a filthy car as serious evidence."
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.